from stpetecatalyst.com.
Hey, I'm Bill DeYoung, and it's the Catalyst Sessions for Tuesday, June the 2nd. Thank you for joining us. Reverberations is the first installment of Dance in the Time of Coronavirus, which is happening from 11 until noon this Saturday, June the 6th, on First Avenue South, between 27th and 23rd Streets. Now, this is a socially distanced dance performance by choreographers Andy Scott and Amanda Saratsky, who are joining us today on the Catalyst Sessions. Andy teaches dance, there she is, at the University of South Florida. Amanda is a visiting assistant professor of dance at the University of Tampa. But we're going to get to the details on Reverberation in a moment. Andy, you're essentially our local guy, so let me start with you. Let me find something else to do. Yeah, even better. I've talked with Helen French about this. Interdisciplinary dance doesn't enjoy the same kind of massive and enthusiastic audience in the Bay Area that, say, you know, music or theater have. I mean, do you think the people, if you will, find it, I don't know, incomprehensible as an art form, or they just don't get it, or maybe they don't find it stimulating or entertaining, or is it education? Is it something else? What is it?
Well, you know, I think that dance kind of has a feeling around it as something that's difficult to understand. Okay. And so I think often the way that we build audiences is through the performers and through the connections that performers have. So it's often, the audience is often filled with, you know, family, friends of people that are actually connected into the performance that you might be seeing. Uh-huh. It's harder. I think the reach is harder. It just has this feeling of, I'm sure I'm not going to understand it, so I'm not going to spend the money. So that's, and those, I mean, those are theories, right? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, no,
I don't know for sure. But that is one of the reasons why I do the work that I like to do, which is to bring dance outside of the theater and try to create opportunities for people to encounter
right. This
thing. Because, you know, so much of what we like has much more to do with what's familiar to us rather than an actual value. So people that maybe don't get to experience dance incidentally, or it's not in their lives, they're not going to have moments for this thing to become familiar. So I would like to bring the dance to the streets so that people can have more opportunities to come across it, and it becomes this thing that is not so over there or inside that building or behind that paywall, or, you know, something that's not accessible.
Yeah. What you know, the reason I would sort of raise a devil's advocate finger to that, if you will, is that, you know, like visiting sort of ballet companies come here and people go, oh, I can deal with that. I can go see the Russians doing Swan Lake. But when you sort of put your toe, again, it's all fingers and toes today, you know, outside a specific line, they're like, I don't get it. But in places like New York and places like Chicago and LA and Boulder, all over the place, people do get it. Are we just not, is it a matter of not being cultured enough here?
I think it's just a matter of how much
I don't know if you want to say that.
You know, I do think that we're cultured. I think that St. Petersburg is a really cultural city with a very smart and cultured audience. And I think that there's definitely an openness, particularly in this community, to seeing new things and trying new things. And,
yeah. You
know, I would actually follow up by saying, you know, ballet is something that's familiar to a lot of people. You know, a lot of people put their children in ballet classes when they're kids. And, you know, so there is a kind of exposure to the more classical forms. You know, I think
to the, you know, I always use the word, and I use it comically, but I always say, oh, the great unwashed, you know. And it sounds wrong to say that, but I think that people are conditioned to being what they're, you know, most people, you know, unless they learned about how cool dance can be.
Right.
That's
right.
What they think of it is women in tutus.
Right.
On lake, you know.
Exactly. And I would actually posit that we're all dancers. You know, we are all actually, we read movement every day. Like, I know when I can cross the street or not. I know when somebody is going to actually say hi to me when they're walking toward me or if they're not going to. So we read movement all the time. And I think there's something about trying to unrarefy it, if that's kind of a word.
Oh, yeah, no, well.
To bring it back to this thing that, like, actually, I watch movement all the time. When we're driving, we're always making sure that we don't hit something. We're always paying attention. And I think, particularly now, I think that people have even more, they're getting even more training in terms of space and watching. You know, like when I walk my dog and I come around the corner and then somebody automatically shifts over to the other side, you know, and then if I'm in the grocery store and now we're all being directed. So I'm hoping that this might actually help people understand too that we're actually all dancing all the time. And then if we just extrapolate that a little bit further and are okay with trying to get a sense of feeling what we feel when we watch something versus, oh, I have to understand it. I have to know the story. That there's actually something that dance has a way of getting into our bodies and our psyches in a different way that's not perhaps quite as literal or linear.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons we're talking today, right? Hi, Amanda, by the way. I'm sorry. I knew I was gonna apply her with all this stuff first, but your dedication, Andy, to dance as a public art form. I wanted to show a photograph from our trail, which I have here, if I can figure out how to make this work. You know, between the Art Town thing you did and our trail, which is on the Pinellas Trail, you know, and it's just what you've been talking about and what we're gonna get to talking about with Reverberations. Why is this so important to you? I mean, you've said that it is, but to bring it to people.
Well, I think it's important for us to be able to understand that we come with bodies and that those bodies exist in space and in nature. And if we can actually connect through our own physicality, we actually have more capacity for our humanity. I think that dance can save the world. I think that there are mirror neurons. So when I'm watching somebody dancing, there are mirror neurons inside of me responding to the movement that I'm seeing. And that's this very tiny, tiny beginning of connections between me and you and other human beings. I think that we understand things in our bodies. I think that, you know, these ideas of these sayings that we have, I feel it in my bones, I know it in my gut. They're based inside of our bodies because our bodies are always giving us information about the world around us. And I think especially in this time when there's a lot of things to sift through and a lot of things that are hard to understand or hard to connect with, that if we start by beginning with ourselves, our bodies, our physicality, how we already engage with the world, that is a place through which we can create connection to other people. So I think when you see somebody moving, you can't help but respond. You may physically move or you may want to move, but you are literally moved by something that you see. And I think that is a way for us to connect with our own personal sense of truth, our own personal sense of integrity. It's a way, you know, there's something like when you hear something from somebody and you're like, I don't know, that doesn't feel right. That means that there are other responses happening. And the more that we can kind of continue and build on our movement training, our movement systems, the more versed we can be in communication with other people.
But still, it's art too. And it's exactly. Funny because my next question on this fun little list I have here was about mirror neurons. Because I listened to your Creative Pinellas interview with Barbara, and I said I want to ask her about that. But the idea is okay if I'm vibing with this movement I see, then the movement goes in a different direction than maybe I could or I would or my brain, and that's art, right? Then it takes you. Does this sound like a bunch of bullshit, or is that's about
no,
it?
No, I mean because it's all a doorway. right? Yeah. It's always a doorway. It's always a way in. So for some of us, for me, my way in is through physicality, through movement, through those things. And that is the thing. When we connect, when we encounter, when we interface, that's actually just the first moment of possibility, right? So mm-hmm. that's our moment of connection. And then from there, we bring all of our personal experiences to that particular moment. And then it helps us to see things in different ways and to widen and broaden and become better humans. I really do think that dance will save the world.
I heard you say that before, and I heard you say it 5 minutes ago too. And you know, to me, it's perhaps even more simple than that. It may be, I think, people losing their fear of dance will save the world. You know.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Because I mean, my whole entree into dance is taking it into other spaces in order to open those doors for other people. Because I think that there is so much apprehension to even walk through the door because you feel and fear that you might not understand what you're about to see or witness.
Sure.
And,
yeah.
And I come at it not only from a choreographer's perspective, but I'm also a writer. So I understand there's different scaffolding, there's different ways and structures that we can create for people, you know, prior to coming into experience, during the experience, after the experience, that not only immerses them within the dance in a way that when you take it out of the proscenium and out of the theater, it can also help them connect to it in deeper ways. And maybe that's through the music, maybe that's through something that they read beforehand, but there's so many different outlets and inroads, I think, into just contemporary dance in general. And it doesn't have to be that narrowed perspective. But I think a huge thing too, going back to the idea of education, surrounding dance is just huge. It's shattering that image. And the only way to shatter that image is to continue to put different ways of dance taking place into the community.
Well, let me take this a step further, Mandy, because I was going to talk with Andy and I still about her use of different lighting and technology and music. And mm-hmm. I wonder, is that like the sort of discipline area that you come from too? Like, you know, using, what do they call it? Multidisciplinary, as much mm-hmm. as you can to make something that's not just a person sort of moving. But the whole, is that part of your experience?
Yeah.
You're in Atlanta, am I correct in saying that?
No, so actually I was born and raised here in St. Pete.
Oh, okay. Well,
No, I'm a Floridian through and through. And so I'm at the University of Tampa right now as adjunct faculty. So I know you said my title beforehand.
Oh,
but,
okay.
I made a lot of interdisciplinary works up in Atlanta. I was up there very briefly. I also made a lot of work in Tallahassee, working with a lot of art galleries and kind of putting dance out on the streets. And then I returned back to the Tampa Bay area last year. So this is kind of connecting with Andy, first time getting some of this work off of the ground here locally. But I come at dance from an interdisciplinary perspective as well. I combine a lot of poetry and movement, and I'm also really big on collaboration with all kinds of visual arts and other performing arts in order to provide those doorways for people.
Does that musicians that I know will talk about collaborating as a way to you know, inspire them and kind of move them around and get them out from their sort of same old? I mean, is it the same way with choreographers where you guys would say, I can work on that with you and together we can make it better? Does that stir up the cobwebs a bit?
Yeah, I think absolutely.
Exactly what we're doing.
Okay.
Right, because I think the thing is, you can have so many ideas on your own, but then the minute you add somebody else into the mix, then something becomes possible that wasn't possible before.
Oh,
so,
sure, yeah.
And that is something that I am so grateful to with Amanda, and that every time we have conversations, I mean, we started this project by saying, okay, so how are you doing? What's going on? And the next thing that we knew, we were like, okay, we're doing this series of performances because there are just so many ways to build. And when you have somebody else in the room, you just have so many more options. I know you probably have things to say toward that too, Amanda.
Yeah, no, I think the more minds that meld together, the greater the impact always for me. The more voices I have in a conversation, the louder you get to amplify that single idea that you might have had, you know, sitting in quarantine by yourself and not, it's that reaching out. And I think this in many ways, and I'm speaking a little for Andy here too, I feel like this is kind of reaching back out into the community in a lot of ways and thinking, you know, not only, you know, what feels good for us as choreographers, but what does the community need right now? And I think there's so much happening currently in America, and I think empathy is huge right now, and thinking about voices and the power of voice. And so a lot of that is, I think, what's coming up for us as we've been talking and kind of planning this series for the summer.
I think that empathy should be huge every day of the year. And you know, we could go on and on forever. I did want to talk to you about Saturday's program, okay? And I think it's better if I just ask you to take us through it, because I could say, well, you know, people are going to loop around on bicycles. I just sound like an idiot. But I think when you guys say it, it sounds incredibly cool. So who wants to tell us all about it?
I'll let Andy take it away.
Okay, so this first performance is a public art dance piece. So what we're doing is we're having 35 dancers lined up along three blocks of First Avenue South,
right.
Starting at 27th Street and going all the way down to 23rd Street.
Are they on the sidewalk or in the parking lots or where?
The dancers will be on the sidewalk, and then the bicyclists will be in the bike lane, and then any pedestrians that want to watch would be on the
side. But traffic's going by, right? So
correct. And it is
that's going to be fun.
Right, exactly. Well, and that's the reason why we chose First Ave South, is because there's a dedicated bike lane there. And
I know that stretch very well. Sure.
A little bit safer, right? So everything about this and everything that we're going to be doing over the summer is really thinking about ways to keep everybody safe. So the whole idea of even having the audience on bicycles was our kind of like initial nod toward, okay, how can we be as safe as possible in order to do this thing that we all want to participate in. So, right. And you know, it's a really big experiment. We will know a lot more on Sunday. Let's just say that we'll know a lot more.
So you mean heading into whenever part two is, it's like, well, we learned this with part one.
Exactly. Correct.
So it's basically a 10-minute piece. Didn't you say that it just loops for the hour?
It's one long dance phrase that will just be performed all for the course of an hour. So they're just repeating, and then the audience is welcome to join at any moment. And I think this is the thing that that I would really love to be clear, is that the performance will be happening the entire hour. So there's no need to be there at 11 o'clock for the beginning. It will just be a durational piece that's occurring. So if you want to come at 11:20, that's great. If you want to come at 11:40, that's great. So the one thing that we don't have control over is how many people are where, but we are giving over to people's kindness and people's willingness to be respectful toward others, safety and experience. And
we're not saying masks are mandatory, but they're strongly encouraged, both for dancers and the people viewing. And yeah, and it's something that you can even loop back around. So if you're on a bike and you want to take a loop around the neighborhood and come back by to see it again, it'll have the way that Andy has kind of choreographed this movement, kind of flip book effect. So as you go by, you're getting the stop frames as you go down the block. So it'll be something that is definitely an event to be experienced.
Well, describe the piece to me, Andy. I mean, how did you make it up? But I mean, what is it saying, and why is it appropriate for this event?
Right. So the movement material, first of all, it did. I've been thinking about this idea of trying to make a movement flipbook for like 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. So I love the idea of amplification. I love the idea of echo. I love the idea of something that kind of ripples through space. So it definitely has a feel of almost like a moving meditation. Mm-hmm. The material also, because this is a moment in time where there is a lot to feel. There's just a lot to feel. So this in many ways is an homage. It is a memorial. It is a reawakening. It is a meeting point. So the material is very circular and very continuous, and I would say more meditative in quality. But it is something that I'm hoping will travel through all of the dancers, so that we are also, you know, connected. We're all connected. All the dancers are connected through the same material, and we watch that unfold.
Let's reiterate for people what we're talking about. This is Dance in the Time of Coronavirus, and it is part one, which is Reverberations, choreographed by Andy and Amanda here. And this is going to be this Saturday, June the 6th, on First Avenue South between 11 a.m. and noon. Is that correct? First Avenue South between, let me see if I got this right, 27th and 23rd Streets.
Correct.
Okay. And are the dancers wearing masks?
It is up to them. Yeah, it is definitely up to them.
Mm-hmm. Bicyclists are, I mean, they're kind of zipping by kind of quick, aren't they?
They are. No. They are. We're asking that the bicyclists continue moving and keep a distance between them as well. And you know, for everybody, masks are recommended, but it's a recommendation. It's not a requirement.
And pedestrians are encouraged to watch on the other side of First Ave South.
They have to wear masks too. I mean, that's more than 6 feet, or that's like 20 feet, isn't it?
It is.
It's not on a bike. If I come down it, which I intend to, I'm going to be walking.
Yes.
So I better got to wear a mask.
I think that it's really up to you and your feeling of safety. You know, I will actually.
Ladies, I'll wear a mask.
Well, and I'll actually have some. I just ordered some more disposable masks, so I'll have those on site too. So if you get there and you feel like, oh my gosh, I really wish I had a mask, you can have one. You know, and yeah.
So we're taking it to the streets. I had a question for both of you about teaching, especially now. Amanda, you're an adjunct here at UT, and I don't know how long you've been here. Did you do this before we went viral, as it were?
Yes. You meaning before COVID?
Yeah.
Yes. No,
You were already at UT.
Yeah, I've been at UT for 2 years. And
Okay. For some reason, I thought you got here like in February or something. I know.
Nope.
So I'm going to ask you both, how have you adjusted to teaching? I think I did ask Helen about this too, that she has this little sort of makeshift studio set up with a camera. You're still teaching online. What's that like?
It is an adventure, but
I
will say dancers, and I'm echoing many, many people who have said this before me, but dancers are so adaptable, and it's incredible what all dancers can do when faced with a challenge. And all of my students rose to the challenge of being online, and it was about exploring new platforms. So for my particular classes, I relied heavily on Instagram, and I learned how to use TikTok, which was interesting. And I'm
sure we all have new skills now.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But I tried to incorporate different platforms, different ways of moving together while still being apart. And so a lot of the movement was more student generated, but it was also really powerful to give them kind of a platform, you know, through the movement classes to express whatever it was that they were individually experiencing. And so that was a huge goal, especially given the short amount of time that we had in that transition, because we left for spring break, and then that's when we heard we weren't coming back. So we were all on spring break when we realized.
Gotta reach out. Hey, we're gonna do this.
Yeah.
Andy, how about for you, Andy? I mean, what can you contribute to that dialogue?
Well, I have. I agree. I have many more skills now than I did before.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it was actually a really interesting challenge, because it breaks down and it kind of forces forces one to ask the questions, what is it that we actually learn in a dance class? What is it? What kinds of things that we can, what are the kinds of things that we can do in a limited space that we would normally be doing in a wide open space? So on a certain level, it was a really interesting pedagogical exercise to say like, okay, so what can I do within a 4x4 amount of space? And that has to do more with, you know, patterning and spiraling and how things proceed successively or simultaneously.
4x4.
Maybe there's more things about, you know, quality, like sharp and quick and small versus wide and float and expansive. But, you know, I think I agree with Amanda. Our students were incredibly responsive, and I thought that they absolutely rose to the challenge. But yeah, asking yourself what actually happens in a dance class. And then also being able to free yourself from what it's supposed to look like. So if I can let go of what it's supposed to look like, then we can drop down into what we're actually trying to learn and maybe find a different way to do it. So, I mean, I feel like I worked really hard. I feel like I know a lot more now. And, you know, I also teach my choreography class is a technology dance for camera class as well. And I have to say, I think that with the students being online and having to watch us on video, I think it actually helped train their eye in terms of watching a screen, watching something two-dimensionally. Like, I think it really helped them in terms
of... I was going to ask about that. Because you don't have the group experience that where everybody's in the room watching everything. Right. They're very focused.
Right. Well, and you know, when I started teaching, it made me really understand what I was missing when I went to this format. So normally I can hear other people. Normally I can respond or watch through the mirror and I can see other people. There's so much more of a kind of 360 antenna that happens. And then when it has to all be directed in one direction, it's only coming back from one direction. You can't hear everybody, you can't see everybody, you can't even feel temperature changes. So that actually helped me to think about what are all the things that we learn in a dance class that are not steps, right? So yeah. We pay attention to space. And so what we did at USF is we devised some creative activities for the students as well, and each of our professors contributed, but a lot of mine had to do with close your eyes, try to walk from one end of your house to the other end of the house. Do you know where you are? How do you know where you are? You know, listening exercises. So close your eyes and listen to what's in the room, listen to what's in the house, and then imagine what you can hear outside. You know, so these ways of trying to keep those antennas firing when it feels so flat on a certain level, right? It feels so one-dimensional.
You're making it work. You are making it work. That is kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Amanda, did you have something to say?
Yeah, no. I mean, I completely agree. It was really trying to push outside the box. And UT, we have a pedagogy focus on our dance students. And so for them too, it was, how are you going to continue teaching your classes in this new format? And what new ways are you going to use? A lot of the methodologies that we talk about are about training critical thinkers and smart dancers and dancers that are able to problem solve in real time. So in many ways, this was the ultimate experience for that, and the experiment of, well, can you create a virtual dance classroom on the fly? Here you go.
But by the same token, we're almost out of time here, but I would imagine by the same token, you're both kind of still looking forward to the day when you can all be in a room again together.
Oh, definitely.
Absolutely.
So ladies, I want to say, you know, thank you, obviously, and remind folks about Saturday over on First Avenue South in St. Petersburg between 11 and noon, between 27th and 23rd Streets. Bring your bicycles. If you're going to walk, get on the north side and hustle on the sidewalk or the bike lane over there, however you have it set up. It's going to be beautiful. It is Reverberations. It is part one of Dance in the Time of Coronavirus. Amanda Saratsky and Andy Scott, thank you. Gosh, thank you so much. This has been fabulous.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you so much for having us, Bill.
We'll see you, I would say, break a leg. See you Saturday.
Thank you.
Bye.
From stpetecatalyst.com.